Hello and welcome to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast about the power and importance of neighboring. As usual, I am joined on the virtual front porch by my colleague in neighboring, Adam Barlow Thompson. How are you, Adam?
Oh, I'm all right. I'm feeling a little sore this morning.
How are you now?
My old age just getting to me, that's all. So, but I'm excited to be here on the front porch, the virtual front porch, because we have someone who we've met during the pandemic times, who's quickly become like one of my favorite people in our community. Yeah. And so we have Megan Ginn with us. Hello, Megan.
Hey, good to be with y'all this morning.
Yeah. And so Megan, I want to give the listeners a little background of how we met Megan and how she's become really one of our people on our in our inner circle here. So Megan joined, it's one of her gifts is that she just like finds all of the best resources that are out there and just willingly participates and learns from basically anything, which is awesome. And then she shares that information with us, which is great. And so you joined the Global ABCD event. Is that right? Is that where we first met you?
Yeah.
So it was a Global ABCD event. We hosted one of the seminars and Megan was in the call. And we had talked about in that we work with churches and we have we were recruiting people who could be facilitators for our Good Neighbor Experiment, which is the training experience we have with churches. And Megan, I think it was in the chat. I think you private chatted me in that Zoom call and you were like, hey, I want to do that. Like, and I just followed up with you. And the more we learned about you, the more we were like, this person's awesome. We should definitely include them in everything. And so you signed up to be a facilitator of the Good Neighbor Experiment, which you are about to wrap up your training for that. And then we'll be able to host cohorts, both virtually and in person. And so Megan is in Florida. And why don't you tell us a little bit about like who you are, why you've found yourself in this world of researching asset-based community development and neighboring and concepts like this. So thank you for being on the virtual front porch and yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So we met, I think that conference was in June or July of last year. And that was during the time where I was jumping right into this. I was still new. I didn't really know a lot. And I remember the session y'all led was one of the ones where I learned the most. So yeah, I was like, I need to get in touch with these people. I am out of Central Florida, which is huge, but specifically Orlando and the Orange County area, and really started getting involved in asset-based community development and learning more because I work in a faith-based nonprofit. So it wasn't really anything that was going on in my own neighborhood or community, but just looking at the ways that we were supporting churches to get more engaged in their community, we knew there was a need for a different approach. So that's how I ended up here.
I mean, like you discovered ABCD not through us, but you came to one of, how did you find out about ABCD at first?
So we at the nonprofit, I had been working with CRN, Community Resource Network, for about 6 or 7 months at that time on a pilot program that we had to shut down due to COVID. And so when that happened, we just had some space to really figure out, what could we do better? And so in that, I started doing some research. I think that's one of the things that millennials bring to the table is just being able to find random things on the internet. And so I think that's where I get that from, but came across a lot of research and work in the Central Florida community about the state of service. So specifically, there was a research project done all the way back in 2010 called Seeking the Welfare of the City. And it showed how the way that we were providing poverty alleviation wasn't actually moving the needle on poverty. So it was really crucial. And that is what first got me into learning more about Ozhebe's community development. So that's when I got connected with the ABCD Institute at DePaul, found out about the UNConference, and really just started getting to know anyone who was doing this type of work.
I love that we are part, like we are one stop in that rabbit hole. And that's so exciting to me that like, I feel so honored that we, that you ended up entering into our little space around ABCD. And I think what Megan's experience and our experience has in common is that as soon as we found it, it was like, these are words for things I've felt and believed and like wanted to live out my entire life. And I love that I now have a framework for talking about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was extremely humbling because at first I was like, I think I'm the first person to notice this. Like I need to figure out what to do. And then I realized there are hundreds and thousands of people across the globe who have known this for decades and are already working really well in this space.
What did you find like attractional or most attractive about ABCD? Like what kind of pulled you into that rabbit hole, so to speak?
So I've worked for a couple years now in the nonprofit and church congregation space. So I got my graduate degree in social work, and that was really the first time I had the opportunity to work in case management and providing financial assistance and support for families. And there was just something about that process that felt off to me. So just a quick example, anytime a family would apply and they weren't eligible or they didn't meet the criteria, the conversation, even though it wasn't shaming them, was always around, it was something on their end that they needed to do, right? So they weren't motivated enough. They needed to get a couple more things in order. And we never asked the question, are the services we're providing actually the best, right, to actually help families move out of poverty? And so coming from that, I think what really resonated with me about asset-based community development was that it gave people permission to be human, right? So like, it's okay for families in poverty to have a bad day, to not have it all together. And in the same way for social workers or service providers, it's okay to not have the answers and to acknowledge that and actually to work with people and not put that burden on ourselves to fix anyone else. So yeah, I think just that permission that everyone can be human.
And you're like social work background, right? Like that's...
So I have my master's in social work, which in the state of Florida, it's 2 required internships. My first one was case management, and I figured out very quickly that introverts don't thrive meeting like 8 different people in one day. So I have a small background in social work, but it's more looking at the community and organizational level.
And I mean, I think part of what I'm starting to recognize is that this paradigm shift is something that in our like formal education as community developers, social workers, caregivers, like we got the opposite in our training often. I mean, maybe you didn't, but it was definitely how I was trained was create a list of needs, create some programs to fix them, and then make people go through your programs. And your programs are successful if you get more people who need them, which is backwards, but is the way it works. So like, yeah, I get that unlearning process that you're talking about really resonates with, I think, my own journey, and I think a lot of other care providers as well. So.
Is it because of the use of, there's the needs focus and the use of labels? Is that what's dehumanizing in that process? To frame it in the positive also is like, what is it that's humanizing about an asset-based approach? And is it because we're opening ourselves up to the whole person instead of just their needs or issues?
Yeah, so that was a part of my learning journey. And even as an organization, so at CRN, We started 3 years ago knowing that the missing component in poverty alleviation was relationships. So we were doing really good at providing tangible goods and resources, but we know relationships are essential for families to exit poverty, and that was missing. So we began by creating different opportunities for churches and congregations to engage better relationally. But what we realized, and I think this was also a big paradigm shift for me coming to asset-based community development, it has to be relationships rooted in mutuality. So seeing that we're on the same playing field. So I don't have some knowledge or insight that families who are finding themselves in poverty don't, right? Like there is still something for me to learn in that connection. And so I think that's probably one of the most humanizing aspects of it, is just realizing that we both have something to learn from one another. And there's strengths in that.
I'm just going to echo back the phrase because I wrote it down and I want to remember it. Relationships rooted in mutuality.
So good.
Yeah, that's great.
So give us a little bit of like a what you're doing now. Like that was kind of like you uncovered this, but then, I mean, I kind of know some of the story already because I'm spoiled and get to know Megan more than the listeners do. But they need to know, how did you guys shift kind of your focus? And then now what kind of are you planning for as you move forward as an organization?
So yes, like I said, we started out providing more opportunities for volunteers from congregations to connect with and support families in poverty. And that's when COVID happened. We had to press pause on a lot of what we were doing. And really the question that we were wanting to answer is, what does it actually take for families to be able to exit poverty and not just manage poverty? Because we know a lot of the way that we were equipping and providing support, we weren't actually seeing that long-term impact and success.
So wait, I just want to pause there because that's a term that is, I think, really helpful. Like, they're not exiting poverty, they're just managing poverty. Mm-hmm. But like all of the things that, like, they're still stuck in the same place, basically.
Yeah, and I think that's it's a harmful cycle for everyone, because then we're just allowing, or we're not providing the support that families need to exit that cycle, to where it's just a continuous state of stress that comes from having to live in poverty. But then also, right, whether it's a nonprofit or a congregation, we're still trying to bandage a wound that is, if you will, internal, right? We're not actually stopping the bleeding, we're just keeping to put band-aids on. And so it's stressful for us as well. I think that was one of the biggest changes, was realizing that there's a better way to do this that doesn't lead to burnout as often, right, for ourselves or for the communities we're partnering with. And so when that happened, had just a couple months to take a step back and look at, right, like, what are we actually doing and how can we do it better? And that's when we came across asset-based community development, neighboring. And so now, as an organization, we just want to invite more churches and congregations to see this new way of doing things, and just giving them the relief and the joy that we've had from making this change. So we're now a faith-based learning and development collective in Central Florida, really just partnering with churches for them to engage their whole congregation in this. So how can we really create a culture change by just getting to know and building good, healthy relationships with others, and understanding that learning other people's stories is a really good first step in that.
So if it wasn't clear, like one of those options is the Good Neighbor Experiment from us, from the neighboring movement that Megan would facilitate for churches. And we'd love for, you know, if you're a faith leader in Central Florida and you want to do that, Megan could guide you through it. But you also have a whole bunch of other, because I told you, Megan finds all the good resources. And so you have a bunch of other like ways that they can engage in that. So like, what are some of those specifics? I know they're out there and I want to hear about them.
One of the first things, and I know I'm just sharing a lot that I've learned, but I feel like it has been a lot over the past year, but understanding that the first step in community impact is actually listening and learning. And I think we often, out of good intentions, kind of breeze through that stage and want to get to action. So a lot of the ways that I've been impacted and that we're partnering with churches now is just in that phase of what is the posture we need to build healthy relationships where we're listening and learning from others. And what are just those first couple of steps? And so, yeah, we whether it's through a partnership that we have or just a resource we've come across, there are a lot of different ways for faith leaders to really jump in and learn more themselves, but also mobilize their entire congregation in this.
Yeah. And I resonate with just the feeling of wanting to jump in and take action, and like how easy it is to overlook that first step of just listening and hearing stories and building those relationships based on actual history. So that's good.
The other thing you said in that, as you described that, was that you wanted to invite people into the joy that you found in when you like had this kind of mindset change. Obviously joy, for our listeners, hear us talk about this all the time, but that's a big thing for us. Like, I'm curious if you could like just give us a little bit more, like, what do you mean this was joyful? Like, you just had to like change your whole worldview. How's that joyful? That can be kind of painful sometimes. I don't know, tell us more about why it's joyful for you.
Well, I think where a lot of people currently are, we talked about earlier about that needs-based approach, which is identifying what's wrong, how are we going to fix it? I think a lot of people currently, like, that's the model they were given, and they were told if you just work harder in this, you'll be successful. And like you said, Adam, I think we're burning ourselves out because we're telling ourselves that success is giving twice the number of families food next year, and we're just always increasing the work we're doing, but we're not increasing that impact. And so I think, right, there's joy in this because I think there's not that pressure to be like the biggest ministry or program around, right? Like realizing that's not what's sustainable for us, and that's not what leads to impact. So it helps us to really celebrate the actual impact and not just the activities that we're doing. And so, yeah, I think it's being able to take a step back and realize that it's not all on us, that we're just a part of our community, that we're partnering with people, but that ultimately, right, what we are hoping to see everyone has to be involved with. So it's not our role to force people into our vision of flourishing. It's just partnering with them to create it.
I think it's striking, and we haven't really said it, but it's implied in what you were sharing, Megan, that folks who are engaged in a needs-based approach, I think, you know, 99.9% of the time, those folks got into that line of work because they care about people, they want to make a difference, they want, and then they were given this model. And so many of the folks I know personally have been crushed under that, the weight of that model. And so I think it's, for me, it's always a good reminder to say, like, they're motivated. They have a really good motivation. It's a genuine. Yeah. And so it's not them or the motivation that's wrong. It's really just this approach, this model, and where you start. And so, yeah, I think that's really powerful. Also, I'm going to throw in one side comment here. I was thinking about the difference between joy and happiness. Mm-hmm. I'm always kind of playing around with that terminology. And I was thinking, like, in the way that I view happiness is like, happiness is we doubled the number of clients that we gave food to this year, right? It's this really like, we're looking for that like numbers increase, mm-hmm. but it's a passing emotional experience as opposed to joy, which is a more long-lasting, sustained, holistic experience, right? And so that movement towards those relationships and focusing on the gifts and mutuality, that's joyful. It's slower, but it's also more sustainable and long-lasting.
Yeah.
And I think a part of that as well is I think one of the necessary components to engaging in this work, instead of right shifting from that needs-based to asset-based approach, is you need to be able to lament really well, because you're realizing like you can't control everything. And so with what you were just saying, Matt, I don't think like lament isn't very compatible with happiness, but it is with joy.
Oh, yes. Britt, oh, look out. Sorry. Hold on, everybody needs to pause because Megan has to pick up her mic. Yeah.
Yes.
I do think oftentimes we lose that art of lament. And Jeremy Courtney, in a couple of his books, he's the founder of Preemptive Love, he talks a bit about this. But being okay with the fact that we can't control everything, having to process that. And so I think that has to be a necessary part if we're wanting to engage in this work.
Yeah, lamenting the illusion of control, mm-hmm. and letting that go is huge.
Mm. Yeah, and there is probably one of my favorite books is The Just Church by Jim Martin. And he talks about it as he, I believe, is the director or vice president of church mobilization at International Justice Mission. But he describes it as the failure point. So knowing that our faith is both belief, so it's correct doctrine, but it's also the ability to trust. And so we have to continuously come to a failure point so that we can mutually depend on God. So he kind of talks about that in the book and how that relates to discipleship. But yeah, I think if we aren't prepared to be with people in pain and in really difficult situations and not being able to do anything about it, I think, yeah, we need to prepare for that point.
If someone's listening to the podcast and they're in a similar place that you were as you started this kind of mindset transition, like what would you tell them to do? Like what should they try to start with? Like what's a practical step that you give our listeners to take in moving towards abundance and relationship and joy?
If it's someone who's at, let's say, a nonprofit or organizational setting, really looking at what does it look like for us to change to this approach? I think, and actually it might be the same answer for two different groups, but getting connected to other people, I think was the biggest support we had. And it was just realizing that other people are doing this, that it's successful, and seeing just the variety of different ways. And I will also say that was something that immediately hit me about getting more involved in asset-based community development. Is anytime I emailed someone wanting to have a virtual meeting, like they just said yes. Like I was meeting with very knowledgeable people who, like, I, as being like 2 months into my journey, had really no, I shouldn't have been using their time, but like they just said yes. Like people who are passionate about this, like they just are, and they're willing to help anyone. And I think it's the same also, right? If you're not in an organization and you're just starting to learn this on your own, just finding, even if it's just one person who has the same desire as you do. And it may not be that they're any further along in this journey, but just having that support network who's willing to go with you is a really good first step.
That's exactly right. I would echo 100%. We had the same experience. Such generous people. When you really discover abundance in this way, it's so easy to be generous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And I think your comment about just even if you're an individual, but connecting with another person, like it bears the wisdom of what you were saying earlier about lamenting.
Mm-hmm.
Like we reach a failure point where it's like, I can't do this alone, which is the illusion of our society, I think, that we're supposed to do it alone. Like nobody's ever thought that in history, right? But we think it now. And it's like, no, don't do it alone. Find someone to journey with you, whatever that step is that you want to take. If you can find somebody to take that step with you and do it in community, it's a whole different experience. It's just so encouraging. I think on any scale to just connect and find people who will journey with us. That's wonderful counsel. So thank you.
Yeah. And it is one of those things. If we know that the end goal is relationships and that's what really creates flourishing communities, that has to be a part of the way we also create flourishing communities. So it wouldn't make sense for us to tell people to get into relationships by like sending an email blast, right? Like we need to constantly be engaged with one another.
Megan, thank you so much for giving us this time. And just, I'm grateful for what you've shared. I'm really grateful for all the work that you've done over the last year to reach this point. Like, it's incredible work. And like Adam was naming the integration that you're doing and bringing it all to bear. And then your willingness to share it with us and our podcast listeners, just really, really appreciate it. It's fantastic.
So. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I've had a great time with y'all.
Good. All right. Well, in addition to thanking Megan, I want to thank Christopher Swanson, who managed to schedule this conversation, which is not an easy thing given our calendars. So thank you, Christopher. I also want to thank Jenna for her editing work and getting the podcast put together. And if you want to learn more about the work that we are doing, you can check out our website also at because I've heard geriatric millennials need to be reminded to type in the W. So
you don't type in those W's, you don't end up on the right website.
http://www.neighboringmovement.org. But yeah, there you can find other stuff that we're up to and what's going on. So, and I think that's it. So until next time, happy neighboring.
Happy neighboring.
Happy neighboring.